It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at the big table, Jameela Woods is going to be here. Her new record, Heaven, just out. You can hear Jameela doing the hook on Sunday Candy, Chance's song off of Surf. We'll talk with Jameela not only about her great new record, her new album, her debut album, but we'll talk about her work with Young Chicago Authors and Louder Than a Bomb. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, Rachel Claff comes in. We'll talk about It Came from the Neo-Futurarium. Great. I guess I keep calling it a film festival, but it really is taking bad films and stage reading them on stage at the Neo-Futurarium in Andersonville. It's great. It's great fun. Check it out. It's in its 11th year. They're back for a summer run. And then, of course, tonight we will bring you The Worst. So that's coming up tonight. Right now, in studio with me, Scott Smith. Scott, of course, our new media contributor here in The Download. Good to see you, buddy. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you. So let's talk. We got a lot to talk about because we haven't talked in a couple weeks. I mean, we kind of missed a couple stories that we'll just leave to the side and go right to the nitty-gritty. The political conventions came through. They were nice. I mean, nice to see. And it seemed like all the media conversations surrounded who was the funniest guy in late night. It's kind of annoying. But to me, I saw over and over and over the storyline emerge on social media that the mainstream media was not covering the real story of the conventions. You know, Bernie delegates walking out, or, you'll see someone who Facebook lives the convention floor and there's not as many people as ABC was. And it occurred to me, and I wanted to ask you about this, is that, you know, are we still relying on the traditional media, the mainstream media, the big networks to tell the stories of our time?
Well, I mean, it depends on the kind of story, right? Like, there are certain stories that work better for TV, you know, that 2 or 3 hour period. And this has been the case for probably the last, I would say, 3 or 4 conventions. Even, I mean, I think there's a good West Wing episode that where Toby is sitting talking with the heads of the news divisions about how this is basically a commercial for your particular party. So this conversation has been going on at least about 20 years. But, you know, there are certain things that work better on TV, just like there are certain things that work better in a sort of newsier format. And there are people who want to consume things in a sort of broad way, and there are people who want to consume things on a very granular level. And the granular place is now in social media. So there are all the tweets that kind of, you know, run the news cycle and kind of determine what gets talked about on the evening news. So, I mean, there are a ton of stories out of the convention. And I think what you saw was that stuff happened in real time in a way that I think it's really impossible for somebody who is sitting in a chair in a box in a convention center. It's difficult for them to kind of cover that in a particular way. Mm-hmm. You know, CNN certainly does that to some extent, but it looks messy on TV, whereas in social, when it's kind of all chopped up like that, it looks more exciting.
Following the political season, this is intrigues me a little bit, you know, with watching how Donald Trump trip up stories kind of go viral. You see the story and then it takes
it's hard
maybe.
I'm actually having trouble keeping up. Like, I was in meetings for like 3 or 4 hours today, and I was like, I looked in, I'm like, there are like 3 things that happened today that I missed out on.
You know, and you kind of, I feel like as a news consumer, I'm very aware of what the links are. Meaning, you know, it's a Donald Trump story, and if it's, you know, things you didn't know about Trump.net.
You had a level of media literacy.
I'm fascinated by the fact that ABC, NBC, CBS are big players. They've taken you and I have been talking about media for a decade now, and they have taken the resources, put it into social media, put it into online journalism, and they're the ones that are breaking these stories. They're the ones that was interesting with the George Stephanopoulos stuff where they put the video out on social media before it went to This Week. You know, like, it just seems like they are becoming the voice of the internet when it wasn't necessarily theirs to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the Sunday shows have had a tendency to kind of put stuff out like on a Friday or something like that, you know, or Saturday, kind of leak it, you know, early to encourage people to watch. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily new, but I think because Donald Trump, to take one person, is so often attracted to the sight of a TV camera, you know, and is so often speaking kind of from the hip, a lot of the things that he says kind of work in that sort of visual space, and it's perfect for video. You kind of have to watch it in this kind of train wreck way. What we're seeing now, though, is that the sort of big networks, because you're seeing, like, over the last 5 years, I think there was something like a decline of like 1.5 hours per day of people 18 to 24 who watch kind of less TV in general. So, you know, major TV networks are now putting as much of their content as they can on social. They're developing this sort of companion stream, if you will. And so in the convention, ABC was interviewing Trevor Noah, and they were doing all this stuff on Facebook Live. It kind of flows from Facebook Live throwing a bunch of money at content creators to create stuff in that space. And, you know, the only reason they're doing that is because advertising money is starting to increase in digital. 2016 is supposed to be the year that digital ad spending overtakes TV. And so the only way people are going to actually go to those channels is if content is there. And so the big ones have got to put stuff up there that's going to rival some of the upstarts like the YouTube stars. And
well,
like
I mean,
that.
As a nice segue into what I've been sort of teasing out about Facebook, you know, sort of gaining ground and could be eventual replacement of TV news. You saw Facebook Live and other Facebook components being used much more prevalent by mainstream networks. ABC talked about, I think it was streaming live coverage 24/7 through Facebook apps and others. Talk about how that theory is manifesting itself, the idea that Facebook could be a future replacement for how we view news now.
You know, it's a good middle ground, right? So it's that difference between, like, here's something that's sort of very produced and very pre-planned in the way that a lot of radio and TV is, and something that's just kind of messy and just sort of flows out in real time. This idea of creating this live video thing is takes advantage of the immediacy of the platform, but the thing is, you can't just dump a TV show necessarily on Facebook Live or on Twitter, as Twitter is also doing similar things with trying to get live TV on its channel. So you actually have to create something that's a lot more driven by personality, a lot more driven by kind of immediacy. There's a lot more casual talk. And a lot of what's done in TV, you know, we've all seen sort of people who, you know, anchors who are trying to engage in like casual banter, and it's always sort of very stilted. You know, you see it sort of parodied in movies like Anchorman and things like that.
Right.
It requires somebody that's got a very huge comfort level with the idea of constantly being live. And while there are certainly a lot of news organizations that do that, it's a different way. It's a different way of kind of speaking. And
it's interesting. I mean, it's almost like an anchor needs to, or almost a new generation of training news anchors, in the way that you're going to have these tools available that are that essentially that was 24/7 coverage of the convention. You could watch through Facebook channels that are partnering with ABC or other networks. But the concept being that you need the kind of personalities that can do that. A news anchor may not be that kind of person. Nothing against a news anchor. They're great at what they do, and they've been doing it for decades. But it may be that it's time for almost like a social media anchor to emerge.
It's a different kind of style. I mean, we've seen that idea of a social media anchor on YouTube. You know, those are the people that, you know, for people that are in that kind of 18 to 24 bracket, that has been their TV. Those are the people that are influential to them. Those are the people that they kind of pay attention to as seen as, you know, really interesting and vital new. I would say news is often a weird term. It's more like sort of new information, you know, rather than what we think of as sort of hard news. And so that's been happening over the last few years. In a lot of ways, the larger, what we think of as the sort of big three TV networks or some of the larger cable news channels are still kind of playing catch up.
Are we 2 seconds away? You mentioned about content creators being hired or at least being used to fill some of these channels. Are we essentially a moment away from the networks and other news organizations understanding this and creating content specifically for things like Periscope, things like Facebook Live?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was at TouchVision, a digital news organization. We messed around with it. We had a show called We Should Talk About This. And, you know, we purposely did it live, and it was, you know, kind of quirky and weird. We had a stuffed deer head that one of the hosts had gotten from Target, I think, you know. So you have to kind of signal that this is not necessarily the super locked up, overproduced kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the excitement is in the shagginess of it. And that's a weird thing for people who are used to producing, you know, major TV productions to put out there, in part because they're always like, well, we don't want to make anybody nervous, in particular advertisers. It's tough to work without a net.
Now, okay, so I'll bring the same argument we had last time we were on the show. We talked about how print journalism or online creation of digital work, not necessarily video, or television, they're dealing with the fact that, you know, they're making partnerships with Facebook, but it's almost a deal with the devil because Facebook is the competition in this case. At some point or another, Facebook will not be directing articles. They're doing it already, but they're not going to be directing back to a home site, to the Tribune.com, whatever it is. They're just going to be stealing that content or reshaping that content. When you see things like Facebook and ABC getting together for the convention, doing the same kind of thing, Facebook Live partnering with ABC, is it the same kind of thing where ABC and television networks should be aware that Facebook is essentially moving to replace them?
Yeah, it's hard to argue that it isn't, right? I mean, it's exactly what you're saying. That the analogy to print is very apt. And TV has, you know, inoculated it against the Facebook virus, if you will, for a long time because it had something that the internet couldn't really replicate, which is this very visual kind of medium.
A curated presentation.
Right. And so they, you know, for you can look at a lot of TV websites right now and they're still kind of, you know, look very kind of old and they look very sort of advertiser driven and they look like value add and what people kind of in the business would say. So there is a danger in handing over the audience that you have to another platform. There is a danger in not capturing information about who's watching what you're putting out there. There is a danger at, you know, using sort of letting the platform and the tools dictate the kind of content that you're doing. And, you know, I think the more kind of entrepreneurial that anybody that's in the content business thinks, the better off you are. But it's really about owning a lot of that data and owning a lot of the ways in which the distribution
happens.
We've
talked about this for years. When a shop, regardless of what kind of news content that you create, has to make a decision, and a lot of it has to do with resources, of course, but the decision is whether or not they go in and invest in their own platform that people are going to come to, or if they're going to borrow off the shelf kind of stuff that is turning into only Facebook, only Twitter. You know, it used to be that you could build one that was similar or maybe, you know, use Vimeo or others. But it seems now that this is the shop. This is where you have to go. There is a danger in that sort of being the only place.
There isn't. The audience is there. You have to be there. You know, I wouldn't necessarily argue that a traditional TV channel should not be actively using Facebook. But if you look at a lot of the content that shows up on particularly local TV Facebook channels, it's a lot of, I'm trying to find a word other than garbage to use, but, you know, it's just this sort of outrage machine. It's this sort of like, you know, found footage kind of stuff. And so somebody consumes that, somebody watches that, and then what? Like, what have you kind of brought them in to do? In what way have you kind of kept them as a viewer? Did this somebody just sort of like see this thing kind of float across their Facebook feed and they haven't paid attention at all to the origin of it? I mean, there have been studies that show most people can't identify what publisher or what TV station or what have you actually published a piece of content. So, you know, once you've actually like entertained somebody or engaged them, like what do you do then? What way have you figured out how to retain them in a way that's meaningful for both your bottom line, the revenue, and an advertiser?
I know we got to take a break. My last question about this stuff. I think about TouchVision did this. I think of other places that they've actually tried to expand this concept in the cable arena, meaning on your Comcast, on your TV, your channel 264, whatever it is. I see Vice is doing that. They've done Viceland where they're like, we're going to offer you all these products. Do you see Facebook in the future going to that model where they create their own channel that competes with NBC, ABC, whatever? Or are they're just content on the fact that they're going to own the internet?
No, I mean, I think that in the same way that you know, there is a level... Print still has a viability because there is still this sense that it is more real when it's in print. And the audience for print is reducing, and so it's more of a specialized product. And because it's a specialized product, the audience usually has a little bit more money and et cetera, et cetera. In that same way, I think there is a sort of, you know, value in creating something for a TV audience and something that feels a little bit more social. So, I mean, we're seeing new deals come out for, you know, creating TV stations. And there was something in Ad Age about that the other day that I was pointing out to my old boss at TouchVision. It was like, look, this is sort of like reverse engineering what, you know, we used to do. So it's headed that way. The question is not so much about, you know, how you're going to make money off of it, but how you're going to make it feel like a real authentic experience.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up with Scott Smith here, our new media contributor here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Scott Smith in studio with me, our new media contributor. Thanks for being here, bud. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
We had Anthony Ponce on Thursday talking about how he resigned from his post at NBC5 to be a reporter to start a podcast where he's a Lyft driver. He's driving for Lyft. He's doing it now, and he's creating a podcast. Do you see this as a trend or just sort of like a one-off kind of thing for newscasters?
I mean, it's a little of both, right? So the media business is increasingly going toward a freelance economy. You know, there are fewer paid full-time positions in the media, and so what you have are a lot of contract positions, you know, even on the editor level where people are being, you know, utilized to write and produce stories, but they are not necessarily full-time, so there's not insurance and that kind of thing.
Right.
So everything is a hustle. The media business is going far. We were just talking in the previous segment about the idea of like big news channels kind of going entrepreneurial and going social. And this is kind of an example of it. On the other hand, you know, Anthony Ponce is going to get picked up by somebody. You know, I haven't seen anything that covers whether or not he's got a non-compete and whether, you know, there is
It's like a 6-month deal.
Yeah,
or
so it's like a period of time where he can then
be
out.
Well, he was good on
the
show. I mean, he talked about just, you know, not having the flexibility in television news to tell the stories he wants to tell.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a perfect way to do it, right? I mean, this is, you know, I feel like he's going to have to. You know, do you have to give a royalty to James Van Alstel on the Car Con Carne podcast? Like, I don't know.
That seems like all the great media people are moving to car-based.
Right, car-based podcasts.
Podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a niche to be filled, right? This is a very classic Chicago thing. This is like Studs Terkel rocking around with a tape recorder, right? Like, this is that kind of space. I mean, you know, you do the show where it's like, you know, people kind of come on and you do the big table with Jamila Woods coming up. It's going to be a long conversation.
Right.
You know, Mark Baser does the interview show at the Hideout. Like, there are... is this very sort of Chicago, you know, interview style where you can tell these stories in a very sort of long form format.
Yeah, and you're seeing more and more people talking about that being making a comeback,
you know,
with podcasts and otherwise, is the idea of a little bit longer style narrative journalism. Okay, so let's talk about Instagram versus Snapchat. You know, I'm an Instagram guy. Instagram just unveiled Stories, which is a new feature for Instagram. And the CEO today in an interview yesterday said, yeah, essentially ripped it off from Snapchat.
Yeah, basically. I mean, they won't mention it by name, but they'll essentially mention it by, you know, what competitors have. You know, this is weird to me because what's happening with what's happening with Instagram is that it is moving toward this sort of louder experience, right? Like when you went on Snapchat, you went on there because it was linear. You saw every piece of every photo that anybody uploaded. And it was this kind of like
Instagram.
Instagram,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
Instagram
right,
was much.
Right, that was what I mean. Yeah.
I'm like,
you're already
I'm
there.
I'm crossing
you've already synergy.
Over.
You've already
right.
gone to that.
But like Instagram was a very quiet experience. It was relaxed. You know, you watch these photos
felt
of beautiful
authentic.
Sunrises.
Right.
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 And then they went recently to the algorithm. And so now you are sort of served based on what Instagram, owned by Facebook, things that you actually want to see. So it is this, you know, more, you know, you have this, it feels like you are being sort of, you know, manipulated in some way. And so now you've got Stories, which is taking something from Snapchat and kind of shoving it into
what
Instagram.
What is it? I mean, what is it
so
taking
the idea
from
is,
Snapchat?
Well, the idea is that you would be able to, you know, upload a bunch of photos and it's in this kind of linear stream. And so you'd be able to kind of click through quickly to see all the photos or videos that somebody takes. And then 24 hours from now, all that stuff's gone and you don't see it anymore. You know, you can't actually leave any comments on it. You'd have to send somebody a DM if you did it. Instagram just rolled out this ability that businesses have had for a little bit. They've rolled it out to celebrities. It's coming to regular people pretty soon. That you would be able to eliminate negative comments and things like that. And
you
so
could curate the comments.
Right. And just get rid of like harassment and things
right,
like that,
right.
Which is a huge topic right now. So, you know, they're pouring a lot of resources into it.
It also plays to this disposable sort of social media where, you know, we've seen such backlash from the idea of people being able to go back into archives and see what people said 5 years ago or posted 3 years ago. We hear it all the time. But it seems more and more that we're seeing our social media in 2016 being disposable.
Well, there's a great book out by Virginia Heffernan that talks a lot about this and this idea of, you know, sort of what we lose when everything is digital. You know, it's all kind of out there, but there is no thing that's kind of, you know, hangs back a little bit and is kind of kept to yourself. And the idea of Snapchat is that idea that you can kind of have fun. It's not a permanent record, if you will. You can have an experience that's digital only, but still goes away in a way that you might have a conversation with somebody on the street And the only two people that experienced it are those two people, and nobody else could see it. And it kind of it has that ephemeral nature to it.
Do you feel you're going to see more social media sites move to that? Do you think Facebook or some of the other stuff that's in the digital realm is going to move towards more of a disposable platform?
I think it's weird to see Instagram become louder as people have desired, particularly on things like Twitter, a quieter social media experience. You know, we've started to see a rise in, particularly among women, of Facebook groups, right? There are a lot of Facebook groups that are curated and put together because, you know, women want to be able to talk to each other without enduring harassment. It's why email newsletters, again, particularly around women, have risen in their experience of wanting to put content out there, wanting to have thoughts, but not necessarily subject yourself to, you know, somebody finding a piece and taking one sentence that maybe you didn't craft as well as you could have and blowing that up into a huge thing.
Scott Smith, always a pleasure to have you, buddy. I appreciate you being here. Media contributor, new media contributor here for The Download. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.